Well, hello, White Sox fans, and welcome to another edition of the Future Sox podcast. My name is Ian Eskridge. Joining me this evening is the managing editor of Future Sox, James Fox. How are you, James?
Hey, Ian. What's up, man?
Sick of watching the White Sox already.
Yeah, well, it's a Future Sox podcast. This is what I used to tell Mike, especially when, you know, I used to joke about when we were with Sox Machine. I'm like, oh, this is, you know, let Jim and Josh do this, and we would do the minor stuff. And now we have games to talk about, so.
Thank God.
Yeah, right?
Yeah, so the White Sox are 1-8, but as James has mentioned, the minor league season is fully operational. I have some video here that I'm going to bring up. For those of you who are listening on podcast form, know that we stream on Sunday nights on YouTube and Twitch, and we do provide a lot of video content. So hop in the chat and say hello, subscribe, like it, please. Moving to minor league takeaways from this weekend, I guess overall for the week, because the Knights played the Tides this week. I guess we start in AAA. Colson Montgomery, I believe he had 7 or 8 hits this week. Yes. And, you know, he had a fairly decent week. Pitching on the Knights going against that just unfair Norfolk Tides lineup. You just got to kind of feel bad for him. And just, you know, I know everybody's panicking watching the Knights, thinking that they've got another White Sox down there in AAA. While that might be true, I would say that this is an unfair representation of what you're going to see for the rest of the year out of the Knights.
Yeah, I think so too. This isn't like one of your Knights squads with two starting pitchers, you know, where it's like just embarrassing every night. Like the Norfolk Tides are absolutely insane. Like, I mean, this is why I think us and other outlets talked all offseason about like finding a way to trade with the Orioles. Right. Cause like you could like take any, give me two of any of those five, like, and it would have been fine. And like, they're going to have a decision to make at some point. I know it's not an Orioles podcast, but like, you know, like their big league team's good too. Like, how is Heston Kerstad not in the big leagues? What are we doing? You know? So, and even like the way it looks right now, like if the White Sox needed a reliever, we kind of talked off air, Prelander Baroa and Bailey Horn, you know, are both on the 40 man, like you couldn't bring either of those guys up right now, but it might be easier if you did for them. Like they'd be like, thank God. Like I don't want to see those guys ever again.
Yeah. The Tides were not merciful this weekend. I mean, as Heston Kerstad put up possibly the most dominant 3 days of minor league baseball I've ever seen. I think he had 6 home runs and 20 RBIs in a 3-game span. I mean, it was just absolutely absurd. And the puns about the Tide going out.
Yeah.
I'm pretty sure that the Knights were just waiting for for them to leave.
What if they played their home games in Charlotte, that team?
Oh man.
I mean, because their pitching sucks too. I mean, the Knights had like 10 or 11 runs a few times. Like, you should win most nights, you know. They were like going toe to toe with them, but like when you're scoring 20 and you have position players pitching, you know, it's kind of ridiculous.
Yeah, the if you guys haven't seen it, look up the Danny Mendick strikeout from the 10th inning the other night. That was, you know, they're going into extra innings and they've used up their pitching so much in the series that they're trying to get a win tied 10-10 going into extras against the Tides. And they have decimated their pitching staff so badly that they only have Danny Mendick to go out on the mound and take the extras. And he surrendered the 11th and winning run, but he did get a strikeout and it was on a nice 38 mile an hour Ephus pitch, which was fairly entertaining. Just the whole series was fairly ugly. They finally managed to scrape a win out today. And oddly enough, you know, I'd say probably the Tide's top three pitchers are generally pretty good. I know the one that they faced today that they actually ended up beating, I believe is their top pitching prospect that's in their minor league system right now. And he was, you know, he looked pretty good, but he did give up some runs, and I don't know. It was just a fairly ugly week, and I was expecting it to not be fun, but I was not expecting it to be, you know, 26 to 11 beatdowns.
Well, they're over immediately. And look, it's not like the Sox have all their pitching prospects there, right? I mean, they get to face a Chad Kuhl and a Jake Woodford, and like, you know, it doesn't really matter that much, you know, but I mean, it's just like demoralizing for the guys there that it does matter for, right? I mean, it'd be a lot worse if it's Jake Eater and Jairo Iriarte and all these guys that we have some hope for getting absolutely shredded, and it's not, you know, but so, and Cannon held his own a little bit. That's, yeah. Even Nastrini was pretty bad throwing 93, and like he still wasn't horrible. So, you know, yeah. Bullpen though, bad, 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 bad.
Oof, yeah. No lead has been safe so far this offseason. I think obviously that's going to improve as time goes on here. It's going to take some of those guys obviously some time to get comfortable in their roles and whatever, but yeah, this week was really ugly. So we got a question, including the White Sox team. How many bad White Sox minor league teams are there? I would say probably the toughest two? Watch this weekend. I mean, the Knights were obviously tough. They just kind of got housed. So that was not fun, but I want to see them against somebody else other than the Tides. I question the offensive output in Kannapolis, how that's going to turn out this year, because there were a lot of very low hit totals for the Ballers this weekend.
Yeah, and that team's just weird. Like, there's a lot of super young guys, and then there's, you know, there's college guys like Riku Nishida, like, has been on base a million times, but that doesn't mean they're going to, like, score a bunch of runs, you know? So there's no power on that team, which is kind of tough, you know? So, yeah, that one's not great, but the pitching's pretty good, so like the games could be low scoring. I think Winston has enough to be okay. I mean, look, the pitching staffs at all three of the other affiliates are pretty good. Like, they should keep you in games, at least the starters. I mean, the Sox have spent a lot of resources on starting pitchers, whether that's via the draft or like some of their trades. So the rotations are all pretty good, so they shouldn't be getting like blown out in most places. But I will say, like, there's a staggering lack of power, like, across the system, like, to me anyways. I don't know if that, you know, if that's got to be a focus. I know you don't want to just like take a bunch of like first base mashers and drafts and stuff, but I mean, they don't have enough power hitters. So I don't know, that, you know, that's one of them, I guess. And then, you know, hopefully we'll have Winston-Salem video going forward, right, now that they're not facing Asheville. So
yeah, they have their home opener on Tuesday, so we'll finally get some video on them that's not from Sammy Zavala's dad, which, you know, will be nice to be able to see other prospects. I mean, no, you know, disrespect to him obviously, and very thankful to see those hits, you know, but like to get eyes on some of these other guys. And yeah, the Kannapolis thing, it seems like it's a bunch of very young guys and then some college guys. That's what, yeah, it seems like, and that's the kind of output that you end up getting out of Kannapolis's, mm-hmm, offense. The starting pitching did look fairly decent though, and
you had Keener go, you had Gordon, right? So
yep, and Bockenstedt went today, and overall, you know, he met some he had some bad defensive plays behind him. He went four and struck out six, and he looked fairly decent. I'd say it was probably about like 70%. His runs were probably about 70% his issue. But yeah, he didn't look bad. And so the arms look like they're fairly decent in Kannapolis.
I think Kannapolis, like, one of their highest upside guys hasn't even gone yet. Eldrin Bautista, he likely goes Tuesday or Wednesday is my guess. I don't know how quickly Grant Taylor will be there, but like he's pretty interesting too, obviously. So yeah, that rotation's decent. And then I think there's some guys in rookie ball that you'll see there later. So yeah, I mean, and look, Kannapolis will be like, when you do the second half of Kannapolis, it's going to be a lot of guys they draft in July on that Kannapolis team. So because there won't be rookie ball at that time. So yeah, that team will look a lot different, like, as the season moves along.
Yeah, I'm kind of curious about that, you know? I mean, because we're in a completely different scenario than we've been in ever before.
Yeah.
So with the rookie ball ending, you know, right before the draft, or it's right around the draft anyway.
Yeah, it's like right there. So then guys will sign, they'll go to Arizona and basically play in like fake games. And then whenever they're like ready, they'll just go to Canny, is my guess. And then like if you took a George Wolkow again, right, like a super toolsy high school guy, they just stay at the complex for the rest of the year. And like we might get some backfield footage or something. But you know, I think the biggest deal with that, and I know we didn't really mean to get into this, but they just with the amount of college pitchers that throw as much as they do, I think like scouting directors just felt like they didn't have enough pitching to run complex leagues that long. Cause you draft these guys, but it doesn't mean you're throwing them a ton. Like even like Seth Keener, I think threw 7 innings or something, like, you know, like after he was drafted, you just don't throw these guys that often.
So this has been, you know, this is completely off topic here. But I want to mention it since I don't want to forget about it. Your feelings on the amount of, you know, we had Yuri Perez go down in Florida. Now we've got Strider having a damaged UCL. Some people are calling, you know, the MLB Players Association is trying to petition to get the pitch clock taken off. Your thoughts on the pitch clock in general?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's fine. I think the bigger issue is like just how these guys train, and you just look like, yeah, we're just, our bodies are not meant to do this, right? And it, like, I don't know if you ever read The Arm. It's great. I mean, what, it's more than 10 years old now, but I mean, Jeff Passan like wrote an entire book on this stuff, and at the end of it, he said we have no idea, like, because we don't like. And I see people like they look at pitching motions and they're like, oh, that guy's going to get hurt. Look how he throws. Like, we don't know. We have no idea. The only thing we know is that like if guys throw 100 with nasty breakers, like they're probably going to have Tommy John at some point. Like they just probably are. And like you bake it in to like when you select pitchers, right? It's kind of like why if you have 10, you have 2, you know, like we have 10 pitching prospects we're really excited about. Hopefully 2 of them are pretty good and like never get hurt. I mean, it's just, I don't know. I think the pitch clock's good. Like, could it be is it causal? I don't know. Right. I think it might have an effect. But I don't think the pitch clock's the reason why guys are getting hurt. I think the reason why guys are getting hurt is because everybody's just amped up to like go max velo and everything all the time. And it's just, we're just not designed to do this. Cause there's going to be more of them. Like this is why you make the Dylan Cease trade, right? And we like that trade, but I think a lot of people kind of thought like, oh, take him into the season and get more, which I get, but like I was scared to death of doing that because of this, because, and he blew out in high school, but it doesn't mean he won't again.
Yeah,
it's just like not worth it. So but yeah, no, it's rough, man. You don't like seeing like stars go down, but I mean it's almost just like it happens and you're like, okay, well, have the surgery and put them back out there, right? Because we're just like accustomed to seeing these guys like just be fine, like, you know, 15 months later or whatever it is.
Yeah. And you know, the only team with a record worse than the White Sox right now are the Marlins at 1-9 with one extra loss. And you know, they just had Yuri Perez go down. They had lost Sandy Alcantara as well, so they're down their two stud pitch, you know, two out of their three best pitchers. So I mean, it shouldn't really be a shock to them either.
You know what their problem is, though, right?
Oh, tell me, but I think
too,
I know.
Too many White Sox on their team.
Yep. I mean, that's entirely possible. The clubhouse culture is just doomed.
They have too many former White Sox. Like, they should have known
better. The culture is just totally shredded. I mean, that's why we got rid of Jake Berger and let Tim Anderson walk, was because of culture. And so now their culture, by de facto, is also bad.
Well, they also have the ghost of Avi Garcia.
Oh, true. I forgot about that. Yeah. I forgot about him. So a guy that I talk to on Twitter occasionally, his name is Maury Brown. His Twitter ad is at biz ball Maury. And he writes for Forbes. And I retweeted one of his tweets earlier. And some very interesting thoughts here on this whole pitch clock versus you know, whatever's causing these injuries. And he says the use of fastball is down with increase in sliders and sweepers. We're seeing increased velocity of stuff with movement, and this is the ongoing trend. Also, the gun is becoming more of a focus starting in high school. TJ, surgery on kids is a cottage industry. All adds up. Says he talked to Pat Gillick, and he got very serious when I asked him about contract lengths on pitchers due to durability issues. This was probably 2008. He said giving pitchers deals of 5 years is not something anyone should be doing. I mean, that right there. I mean, like the amount of people that are going slider first or 50%, you know, like 50-50 mm-hmm. fastball and slider, that's probably has a lot to do with it, I would guess.
Well, and it's easy for like your Astros people, and like when this whole thing took over, right? When it's like your slider's great, throw it more. Like I get it. Like it, you know, it makes a lot of sense. But I think there's just like a reason why things were more traditional, like in the past, probably, right? And I don't know. The whole thing is crazy. Like you got guy like Eury Pérez. The Marlins were so careful with him. You know, they did the whole piggyback thing. They're doing the whole thing that the White Sox are doing now with Noah Schultz, right? Like, oh, you can't let these guys throw this many pitches or this many innings or this or that or whatever. And like, it doesn't matter. Like, it just doesn't. Like, some guys are just going to blow out, like, because that's, you know, it's just like the way that it is. And then you have to take your medicine and hope they come back like the same or better, or you know what I mean? Or close to that. So, and the Sox clearly haven't been afraid of it. Like in the draft specifically, they've actually like targeted guys because, you know, it's a bit of a market inefficiency. Like Paulette was supposed to be a top 20 pick and Grant Taylor probably would have been too. And they get him a little bit later and you got to wait for him, but you know, we'll see. So, but yeah, I mean, there's just so many guys have it younger and younger.
Yeah. Keith Law talked about this on his, you know, his top, you know, White Sox thoughts, you know, on the prospects, said that, you know, one of the things that he's always worried about with guys that have TJ in college and drafting them without them having thrown again is not knowing what you're going to get out of these guys that were pre-TJ, like spin rate, you know, darlings that everybody loved their stuff on, because you don't know what they're going to come back with and don't know if that same spin rate is still going to be there and if it's still got the same movement. So.
Well, yeah, and even like it with the, I don't know, the thing we did before, is that the first rebuild or no? Is that what it's called? Like Dylan Cease and, you know, so like Dylan Cease and Lucas Giolito both had it in high school. You know, like Dylan Cease was a six rounder. I mean, he was a top 20 talent in that class. I remember it at the time, but he went in the sixth round and the Cubs paid him because he had TJ. And Lucas Giolito went 16th overall and then had it, I believe. You know, he was supposed to be a top five pick too. So, you know, this has been common. But there's been a few like heavy hitters this week, right? So it's like in the news for sure.
Yeah, I think that was the rebuild, and I think right now we're in the re-rebuild.
The re-rebuild, so, okay.
Yeah, yeah. I think that's the terminology, the correct terminology.
With the re-rebuild manager.
Oh man, yeah, and it's like he's your favorite guy, so we'll talk about him. And you know, would you rather have Ricky Renteria or Pedro Grifol?
Oh, dude, I would fast forward it and just keep Ricky this whole time if I could. If I knew they were hiring Tony. Because, look, at the time, and you and I weren't together for this, obviously, but, like, I thought it was fine moving on from Ricky to make your push for, like, the long-term manager, right? But when I thought it was going to be Alex Cora or AJ Hinch, I was totally fine with it. And then I was like, wait, you're going to do what? Just bring Ricky back. Like, it would have been fine. At least he was likable.
Yeah.
You know, he would like cook food and stuff for like the media and like whatever it is. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, he got smoked in Oakland in that playoff series. 100%. Like he was way out of his depth in that playoff series, but I would have much rather seen him come back the next year and, you know, had a bitch fest about that, you know, complaining about whether, you know, that Rick Renteria came back.
Yeah.
I would have been much happier talking about that all the time instead of Tony La Russa.
Well, the crazy thing about that was, like, if Crochet doesn't get hurt, that might have worked. You know, like, that plan might have worked. That was, like, not a terrible plan. You get them to set up their lineup with all the lefties and then bring in Crochet. But then once he went down, they're like, they went to bad Rodon and all these. It was bad. That was really bad.
That's what I was going to bring up. The Rodon thing was just like a complete head scratcher.
Terrible. Yeah. And that's where the next year we were all stunned at how good he was. Like, he was awesome. You know, like, I thought that guy was done.
Yeah. Well, he certainly has not been that great the last, 2 years. So we'll see how, I don't know. We'll see how he finishes out this year, but he did have that 1 year for us. He was phenomenal. So, you know, in 21. So moving on to Birmingham, obviously very pleasant surprise. They had a 3-game sweep of Chattanooga this weekend. And we saw Thorpe, we saw Eater today, and we saw
Jairo Iriarte
yesterday, which, you know, we didn't get a ton of innings out of either or any of those three starters, but the bullpen looked so good it didn't matter. So, you know, we had Addison Coffey last night look like the Addison Coffey that we were hoping that we were getting in, like, you know, for the last month last year, and then the Arizona Fall League. His command went all over the place, but he came out and threw 17 out of 22, I think, for strikes yesterday. So, and then the lineup, you know, it's not quite the Norfolk Tides, obviously, you know, but, in double A, it's looked pretty good.
Yeah. And one of the underrated guys, you know, the guy that Jim Callis told us the White Sox love like quite a bit, Brooks Baldwin, man, he's playing well for that team. And I don't know how many guys you would talk about, like, before you even get to him. Like, that's how kind of loaded that team is. And, you know, you got Carroll there, and you got Brian Ramos, and all the outfielders and fan favorite, Tim Elko, you know, and Brooke Baldwin just, you know, keeps taking his vitamins. It's like, my God, like, he had a big day today.
Yeah, like, the home run to center was substantial. It was really well struck, and he's looked really good, and he's taking walks, you know, and we've got Terrell Tatum with like a 33% walk rate right now. He's got like six walks already or something like that this season in like, I don't know, like 16 plate appearances or something like that. And I mean, and like the weird thing is like you got Brian Ramos who's batting 100 right now.
Yeah.
And they're still managing to do this.
When Wilfred Varus has real power, right? And just the fact that he might be able to functionally stand in an outfield corner makes him a prospect, right? Like if he was first base only, you know, he's kind of still a prospect because he can mash, but like you have to mash. You just have to. Like we're seeing it with Andrew Vaughn right now. But I mean, if he can stand in left field and be okay, I mean, he's a prospect. Like Wilfred Varus is pretty good and he's young too.
Yeah, the amount of torque that guy generates from his midsection for his swing is just prodigious, I guess you could say. Crazy, easy power. I mean, I guess you could call it easy, but you could also say that he's just swinging for the moon. But I mean, either way, he's connecting and it's going very far. So do you want to move on to the situation in Chicago?
Well,
I mean, I know you don't want to.
We can. I think we're remiss to not just mention. So I know there's like not really video. We tweeted a little bit about Noah Schultz. One of our Twitter followers drove over to Asheville, so we didn't have to. And I kind of talked to him in our Future Sox DMs. He was funny. He's like, well, when I realized like the tourists didn't have like cameras or whatever, he's like, I figured I'd just drive over, which is convenient, I guess, if you live there. So he took a bunch of video. I retweeted it all from the Future Sox account. You know, I talked to some people that were at that start. He's just, that kid is absolutely filthy. You know, 10 Ks and four innings. I think they do want him to throw more pitches than that. I was told 75 pitches or no, I think it was, yeah, like 70 pitches or four innings. He went four innings and K'd 10 guys and nobody had a chance. So we'll see. He's going to start every Saturday. Next week, they're home, right, at Winston. So, you know, I would imagine you'll have plenty of people there. I think Josh Norris, Baseball America, has already said that he's planning to be there. So I think when scouts and prospect writers and stuff know that he's starting every Saturday, that'll be a thing, like Saturday nights with Noah Schultz on the internet, probably. So pretty interesting.
Yeah. So for Schultz's line, and I tweeted about the line of it, but, you know, he was on a 75 pitch limit, or, you know, roughly around there. And he got through his four innings, his, you know, four up and down. And he went and threw 40 of 54 for strikes. He only needed 54 pitches to get through those four innings. So, I mean, that's pretty awesome.
Well, he's not like one of these. It's not what you think, right? You think it's like this big, overpowering 6'9 guy that's like walking people, but like he doesn't. He doesn't pitch like a 6'9 guy. He just like throws nothing but strikes. And then if he gets an advantageous count, like, you can't hit the slider. So it's just like over, you know? So it's, look, I mean, you're talking, and I know the whole, like, there's a lot of people that think there's no such thing as a pitching prospect, and I get it, right? We just talked about the arm stuff, but I mean, if he does this all year, he's a top 10 prospect in baseball and the best left-handed starter in all of the minors. Like, he is that nasty.
It's wonderful to watch. I can't wait to get video and actually be able to watch the movement on the pitches. And so as an aside here, I'm going to take this moment right now to complain about Charlotte. And I don't know who thought it was a good idea to move the center field camera into right center field. So you have an angled, you know, a really weird angle from the pitcher to home plate. Blows my mind. It is like, it's awful. I don't know who decided on that camera angle, but it's terrible.
Did they also change the logo again?
So they had the new uniforms last year.
Okay. So they're the same ones as last year then. Okay.
Yeah, as far as I know. I think so. I'll look again.
They're just always different I feel like they're different colors. And I know minor league teams like always do this, right? Where they, you know, like whatever, they have their theme nights or whatever. But yeah, I just feel like they're always in different years. They're blue one year and then they're gold and then they're like whatever. But
yeah, they're like the Oregon Ducks, you know. They've got 35 different combinations of uniforms that they can wear.
That's how many relief pitchers they've used too so far on the year, like against the Norfolk Tides.
Holy cow. That was painful, because even the games that they were in the lead, I was like, there's no way that they're going to outslug the Tides. There's just no way. And then finally today, the Tides were like, all right, you know what? We're tired of scoring, you know, double digit runs. We're just going to let you guys have this one. And then, so
they kept Peyton Burdick in check, though, didn't they?
He hit a home run.
Did he have one? Okay. Well.
Yeah. See, that's the thing about Peyton Burdick, is if he had stayed and gone to the Knights, he would have hit 15 home runs all year. He still might hit 15 home runs against Charlotte, or, you know, with, you know, against Charlotte this year, and probably hit like 25 total, you know, hit 10 off of everybody else. Yeah. He loves sitting in Charlotte. White Sox, 1-8. Absolutely brutal to watch. They don't hit. The pitching's looked, you know, as we said earlier, we thought that the pitching staff would probably be halfway decent. Unfortunately, nobody on the team wants to hit. Nobody is, you know. And now you've got injuries, which are taking away a bunch of key components of the offense. So because of these said injuries, there has had to be some shuffling around of the roster, meaning that they had to clear 40-man spots. So what was that, on Tuesday? They traded Jose Rodriguez to the Phillies for cash.
Yes. Which basically means like they were going to lose him on waivers, is my guess. The best offer they got is cash, right? So I could snarkily say right now that, like, look, like Major League Baseball kind of told you like what they thought Jose Rodriguez was worth because of they had to put him on a 40 man spot, right? Like, I'm not going to assume that the White Sox didn't shop him around the league first, right? So for whatever reason, like, teams didn't feel like giving you like a low level prospect for him, and the White Sox took cash instead of losing him for nothing. That's not really the point, though. So you can continue.
See, my personal opinion, I was not happy about it. And, you know, I had somebody comment to me that, you know, the other night, Lenine Sosa took 3 walks in a game. And he's like, oh, that's why he's still here and Popeye's not. And I'm like, I got to look this up really quick. So I tallied up their walk percentages, you know, their walk rate. And Jose Rodriguez's walk rate was better. So I'm not really entirely sure. And, you know, me and you had talked about this, you know, obviously off air about, you know, the possibility of there being something else going on, because we're trying to figure out why you would let a guy with 20 home runs coming off of a hamate injury and 30 plus stolen bases with a plus glove at second base, why you would just let a guy like that walk. I'm still kind of trying to figure, like, wrap my head around it. I don't get it.
No, I mean, it's weird. I mean, look, they clearly decided that, like, they've prioritized Lenine Sosa and Braden Shoemake over him, and they can't keep this many infielders. So, like, that I agree with. Like, that we've talked about this for months, right? That's not the problem, though. The problem is, for people like you, and look, like, I'm a little bit indifferent on it. Like, I get it, right? Like, there's publications that ranked Jose Rodriguez, like, in the back third, like, you know, 25 to 30 on a middle of the pack system, right? So is it the end of the world? No, but he has, like, a lot of fans. Like, cut Paul DeJong and just play Sosa and these other guys and then keep Rodriguez on the 40 man. That's the argument, right? So, yeah, like, I get why they did it. They don't have any freaking 40 man spots, and he's not ready to help you. But the problem is prioritizing, like, all these veterans on a team that's going to lose like 105 games. So then you lose Jose Rodriguez, right? Like, he might be nothing. This might be Luis Alexander Basabe when everybody got mad about that too. And he's nothing, like, fine. But it's just like a team in the White Sox position probably shouldn't be doing this. Like, it's just doesn't really make sense.
That's exactly my point. Is my fear was going to be that the Oakland A's were going to pick him up on waivers and immediately just plug him into the lineup right away because they've got nothing over there, really. And, you know, watch him end up being, you know, like a 115 WRC player on that terrible team and say, we still have Paul DeJong in the lineup, and we have Braden Shoemake, who has, I know he's your newest favorite player, James, but he has gone back to who he was, and he's hitting 185, you know?
Well, and even him, like, look, I understand playing Braden Shoemake against right-handed pitching in a lost season to see, right? I don't understand playing Paul DeJong right now. Like, if that was your placeholder on a team that was going to be 500 until your top prospect is ready, I get it. But they're awful. There's no reason to see Paul DeJong anymore. There's just not. So, and look, Jose Rodriguez probably isn't ready. Like, go look at Charlotte. It's 90 plate appearances at Charlotte with a 2% walk rate. I get it, right? But it's like you said, it's all after the hamate injury. I don't know. Do you think it's weird that it's Philly or no? Is it just kind of, it's just kind of random. I mean, they optioned him to their double A affiliate. So they clearly just kind of like him a little bit, but look, he's on their 40 man. Like, the next time they make a big league move, like, is he in DFA limbo again, or does somebody else go? I don't know. Who knows? I assumed he'd go to a worse team, kind of like you were saying, like it would be Oakland or somebody that would, like, let him play a little bit.
Yeah, I found it kind of strange. You know, I didn't understand that whole thing. And so with Charlotte, you know, we talk about how the bullpen's been. So it didn't shock me when Alex Spies was taken off the 40 man and also DFA'd because he hadn't been pitching particularly well. But, you know, then again, we're talking about, you know, what, like 8 games into the season or whatever, 7 games into the season when he was DFA'd. And so now you find out that he's also been traded for cash considerations.
I mean, he got rocked too by Norfolk, right?
He did, yeah. Like, and he gave up a home run against the Redbirds as well, yeah, in the last series.
But I mean, couldn't you argue that, like, I mean, just throw him in the majors instead of whoever? Dominic Leone, Brian Shaw. Like, look, I'm not going to sit here and argue that Bailey Horn and Prelander Baroa and Alex Spies are, like, ready to pitch out of a big league bullpen. Like, I can't really make that argument. But, I mean, he has way more upside than guys that are in your current bullpen. And those are guys that you're going to have to get rid of probably soon anyway. And you don't have anybody to replace him with. I mean, it's the same thing. Like, you're going to give up a kid to add Justin Anderson next week. You know, I mean, this is just kind of the position you're in. Like, they don't have, like, John Brebbia is in a walking boot and he's on the White Sox because they literally don't have anybody to bring up for him. So my guess is, like, he's a roster move tomorrow for whoever's starting. And then they'll figure out the rest later. You know what I mean? It'll just be like a day-to-day thing. Like, you know, people are like, oh, they're playing short or whatever. Like, they literally don't have anybody to bring up unless you want to see Bailey Horn right now.
Yeah, they've done quite the job with their 40-man roster. And, you know, we talked about this before any of this was necessarily an issue, that they were going to have a hard time getting, you know, they were going to have to figure out who they were going to get rid of off the 40-man. And it just so happens that they waited until we're in the second week of the season, or, you know, second week of the season here, to finally start figuring out things with this 40-man, mm-hmm, because they kind of have to now because of the injuries.
Well, they were going to have to trim eventually. Like, we said that, especially if you keep adding stupid veterans for no reason. Like, Bob Nightingale today mentions Tommy Pham again. Why? Like, what does that do for you? Like, I like Tommy Pham. Like, I think he's interesting. Like, he's decent, you know? But, like, why? Like, what is the reason for that? That makes no sense to me. And then you're gonna get rid of somebody else that we're probably going to, like, complain about them getting rid of. It just, like, doesn't make sense. Stop. Just be awful with kids. Like, it is what it is. You got to take your medicine at this point.
Yeah. So this, you know, in the last week, more or less, you've had Eloy Jimenez is now injured. And now Luis Robert has his hip flexor back from a few years ago. And they're saying that it could be anywhere from 1 to 2.5 months, essentially, that he's going to be out. And, you know, as you mentioned, John Brebbia is in a walking boot. Max Stassi is in his rehab stint down in Charlotte, and he is looking extremely mediocre. And you got to make sure that he gets back. So you got to keep that 40-man spot warm. Where are we at here with the White Sox? Are we going to – do you think that they're going to go – and start jettisoning some of these older players to start playing some younger players, just because, I mean, this team is not going to win anything. The fans are fed up.
Yeah. I mean,
the laughing stock of Major League Baseball. At what point do you stop pretending that this is not a complete tear down to the studs and reworking of the entire roster?
Yeah. I mean, it does. You know, like, I think I don't know if I said it on air or off, but, like, Nicky Lopez, right, has some utility. Like, if that guy's your utility guy and you have him as, like, your whatever, he can play some second, some short, he can be on the team, right? But Paul DeJong, that doesn't make any sense. I know they like Martin Maldonado for what he, like, brings to the young catchers, but, like, the young pitchers, but, like, he's bad. Like, I would be fine with Corey Lee getting the majority of the time. I think Oscar Colas should probably come back at some point and play right field, at least against righties, and you keep playing Dominic Fletcher. You know, you're probably stuck playing Benintendi, and you hope that he plays his way out of it, and, you know, somebody will take half of his contract or something from you. But I mean, other than that, like, you know, like, I don't need to see Kevin Pillar. Like, I don't really need to see Robbie Grossman. Like, what's Robbie Grossman going to bring you back if he's good? You know, like, if you want to DH him against lefties, like, while Eloy's gone, fine, right? But, like, who cares? Like, we just, like, don't need to see any of these guys. And the bullpens are the same way. But I will say, like, it's not like they have a bunch of prospect relievers that are, like, kicking down the door that are ready, right? It's like bad teams have Brian Shaws and Dominic Leones. It's hopefully not for that long. And the disappointing thing there is they do have some flippable bullpen guys that are decent. Like, Steven Wilson looks pretty good, and Brebbia looked good, too, before he got hurt. You know, it's just you got nine guys in the bullpen, and there's a few of them that you can't throw, and you really have nobody to replace them.
Yeah, the only guy who hasn't given up a run, I believe, in Charlotte that's pitched so far this season has been Justin Anderson.
Yeah.
And he doesn't have a 40-man spot.
100%. So you'd have to add him to the 40-man. So, like, essentially, which they could do, by the way. Like, they could tomorrow DL Brebbia and call up. Look, I wouldn't be surprised if what did I say? Jared Schuster is the starter because he didn't start in Charlotte this week, and he's on the 40-man. Just start Jared Schuster in Cleveland. Like, it's fine, whatever. And then if you DFA'd Leone and brought up Justin Anderson or so, you know, fine. Like, that, like, those are, but that, the, like, we're 10 games in. Like, this is crazy, you know? So, like, you're not adding Nick Nastrini. He's not on the 40-man. Like, they can't do that. Like, I don't think it's Brad Keller. So, you know, like, it's just, yeah, it's rough. And look, they can't do this many more times. You know, like, they decided Jose Rodriguez wasn't that important and Alex Spies was expendable. But, I mean, if you look on the 40, man, I mean, you got a lot of guys protected on there that, like, aren't going to help you. You're Jake Eaters of the world and, you know, Drew Thorpe and Iriarte and some of these guys. Like, they're just, they have to be on there. So you have a bunch of guys that can't really help you. It's a little bit difficult.
A positive thing that I can say, besides Justin Anderson down in AAA, Chad Kuhl, he's looked pretty good. He's looked serviceable. He was kind of one of those guys that everybody was just like, you know, kind of groaned about when we signed him. But I'll say he's looked pretty good, actually. And he, like, held the tides in check today. He's looked great in his two appearances so far in Charlotte. So maybe he, you know, he might be one of those guys that's going to be one of those guys who ends up either they trade him for, I don't know, probably some more money, because that's what Jerry seems to like to do as of late.
They got to pay for Tommy Pham. So
they got to pay for their soda in the soda machine for the players.
Didn't Tukey keep them in check somehow too?
No, he was terrible.
Oh, he was bad. Okay.
He walked like four or five. I mean, he didn't allow a lot of runs in.
Yeah.
Let me preface that. So he let in somebody else's runs.
Yeah.
He didn't have, it didn't tack onto his ERA. So, but yeah, he walked a bunch of guys. You know, as soon as he came in, it was like a hit by pitch and like two walks and like a single or something like that. Yeah. So he gave up a bunch of runs, but they weren't his runs. So no harm, no foul.
How many of those guys are in the big leagues when the next time the Tides come back? I don't know. You know, I don't know how many spots they have, but like that. There was a fight at the bat rack in Charlotte, because my goodness gracious.
Yeah, that the top five slots in the Tides order, they had something like a dozen home runs this week. Yeah. And like 40 RBIs or something. It was insane.
Well, and it's Mayo, Kerstad, Bastio's there too.
No, Bastio's injured.
Bastio's not there. Okay, so then
he's not there.
Holiday's playing though. You know, even their guys that like aren't
Connor
even
Norby.
Yeah, even their guys that like aren't even like Stowers like isn't even
and Stowers
that highly rated of a prospect, and he's just like launching balls.
Yeah. No. Yeah. It was like those first five guys. It was like the Knights were always down after the first inning because those first five guys, either Holiday would walk or hit a double.
Yeah.
And then somebody else would, you know, hit a single. He'd be at third base. And then it would be a sac fly. It'd already be 1-0. Like today was the best case scenario that the Knights had all week. And it was that they gave up one run in the first inning. You know, I mean, twice this week they were down 10-0 in the first inning.
Yeah.
So, yeah. Anywho.
And I think we saw what, Like the other DFA before that, Sammy Peralta got claimed too, right, by Seattle. Is he still on the Mariners? I don't know if they optioned him or if he's pitching in their bullpen or not. But yeah, I mean, the Sox haven't had much luck lately with being able to like get guys through waivers, like, you know, off of their 40-man. Guys have been getting picked up.
Yeah, and then we had that, I texted you earlier this week that guy that we traded to the Yankees.
Yeah, Jake Cousins is pitching for the Yankees. Yeah,
Cousins already is pitching for the Yankees. You know, granted, he gave up a couple of runs in his first appearance with the Yankees. I haven't looked to see if he's pitched with them again, but I mean, those guys are just getting eaten up.
Who is the next guy that they trade for cash before we record again?
Oh,
I know. It's a long list. I mean, your guy Chad Cool. Like that's what, to Atlanta because they need a starter.
It could be them or the Marlins. You know, like you could get a pitching prospect from the Marlins for, you know, Chad Cool and Tuki Toussaint. Like they might ship both of them there, and you know, like they need somebody to eat innings, and you know, obviously they don't want their entire season gone. So, I mean, I wouldn't be surprised if they're out on the market looking for somebody to come in and.
Yeah.
Put in some serious work.
It's a bad farm system. I know there are there's a lot. Thank you, Sleepy. Mm-hmm. So Peralta's in Tacoma. So there's a lot of people who think this is like karma for the way they handled the Kim Ng thing, you know? But I don't know. I personally kind of like the Rays guy that they hired instead. So it is what it is.
Yeah. I mean, you know, at the end of the day, you can say that somebody runs their team badly, but at the end of the day, it's their team to run how they want to, and that just happens to be a decision that they made. And it doesn't seem like they made a terrible decision, you know. It's at least a competent guy that they brought in. So you got anything else about this awful season that the White Sox are putting together right now?
Yeah, I mean, nothing really on the big league side. They're opening, they're in Cleveland tomorrow for Cleveland's debut. They got some bad news with Bieber, right? We kind of talked about all the guys earlier. True. I think mostly for them, like, they can't trade him now. You know, that they usually are pretty smart and get well out ahead of that. And this time, they're going to get burned by it, it seems like. So, yeah, I mentioned something to you earlier. So there's at not cease on Twitter. Okay, mentioned something he said. So this is in reference to Samuel Zavala, and you showed the home run earlier, and you know he's had some success already in high A. So 18-year-olds who've had a WRC plus of 140 or higher in A ball, so low A, 200 plate appearances, like as an 18-year-old. Okay, so this is since 2016. So he did it. Samuel Zavala did it, along with Wander Franco, Samuel Basayo, Julio Rodriguez, Jackson Churio, Fernando Tatis Jr., and Vladimir Guerrero Jr. So pretty good. And then he did go to high A last year after that and wasn't great, you know, in kind of a smaller sample. And now he's in high A for the White Sox. So we will see.
You don't say.
Yeah. Xavier. Hello, sir.
So, read this comment that's in here. Living Lattes here says, we need more Greg Maddux-type pitchers. Aaron Nola hasn't had TJ.
Yeah.
So.
Drew Thorpe's, baby.
Drew Thorpe, Mason Adams, Connor McCullough. The White Sox do have a bunch of guys in the minors that do have that kind of, blueprint-ish type thing, you know, where they are command first and not that high velocity crazy stuff that you're seeing out of some of these guys. So
yeah. Kyle Hendricks have it? I don't know. You know, I don't know if he ever did, but it's interesting. Well, but I mean, even like Davis Martin, you know, is kind of one of those guys and he blew out. I don't think we know guys. Like, I just don't. I just think it's so like some guys just their elbows just go and then they fix it. And then hopefully it doesn't go again. Like Lucas Giolito is a scary proposition. I mean, that's the second one. Like, is he a reliever when he returns? Like, I don't know. I mean, there's not a long history of guys with two that come back and they're great. I mean, there's guys pitching in the big leagues with two. There are. Like, you know, and Gio's smart and he'll probably figure it out. But, I mean, that's brutal. Like, once guys have had it in high school, you know, you're more likely, I feel like, to have a second one because you're going to pitch for so long. So, like, 10 years in, that's probably about where we are with Giolito. Whereas I kind of feel like if a guy has it in his mid-20s, they're probably good, you know. Like Garrett Crochet had it, and he looks pretty damn good. So, but he didn't last year. It's just sometimes it takes a while.
Yeah, that's the odd thing about Crochet is, you know, like he came back from TJ, and usually the first thing to come back is the velocity, and then the second thing to come back is the command. You know, along with, you know, the command, yeah, along with longer stamina on the mound. And he's one of those guys that it just took longer for the velocity to come back because he was pitching one inning relief stints last year and he was throwing 95, you know. So,
well, because what was like, you saw a lot of Peyton Paulette last year, you know. He didn't look like he looked at Arkansas. He was okay, but his stuff was clearly not back all the way. So he should start, you know, early in the week for Winston too. We'll get a chance to see him hopefully.
Yeah, he was another one of those guys that's like kind of flipped. Like his command was okay, but his velocity's not bad. It's still not back as far as I've seen. Like we haven't seen any of that 99 stuff that he had when he was with Arkansas, you know.
Right.
I don't know if we ever will. I mean, it could be that he's a guy that lives at 95, 96, and that's just where he ends up. Yeah. But it seemed like, you know, the curveball was pretty good last year. So the spin rates are fairly mm-hmm. decent. It's just whether or not he can maintain the dominance that he had in college.
Right.
With a slightly lower velo.
Well, and there's other pitchers too. Like, you know, Tanner McDougal, we'll see this week. He did look good last year after. Like his stuff looked like, I think, even better, I would say. So, you know. That's a guy that's like a riser in this system. You'll have Grant Taylor pitching the year after it. So, you know, you'll kind of have to see if, you know, is it a velocity issue or a stuff issue for him? I mean, he's a super analytical dude, you know, so I think he'll get the most out of whatever he has. But, yeah, we'll see him eventually too.
Yep. So you got anything else this week?
No, I think like so some, you know, the bonus pool stuff came out for the draft and for international. I kind of want to talk about that next week, give you an opportunity to we'll show some college highlights of some of these studs that are going to be at the top of the draft. We got a while, but, you know, since the qualifying offer stuff is done, we know exactly how much the White Sox have to spend now. So I'm going to write something on it. We'll talk about that next Sunday.
Yep. Chase Burns, Hagen Smith, you know, that kind of thing.
Yeah, those dudes. Yes.
Yeah.
Charlie Condon has 20 bombs.
I mean, yeah, he does. Yeah. I guess, you know, Jim Callis did kind of ease my mind that he's not a first base only guy. You know,
it's probably third right or left. Yeah.
Yeah. Like that made me feel better. Looks like, that he if looks he's like available.
Bryant, yeah.
Yeah.
So the baseball's juice though. I don't know how much college you've watched. Like the baseball's juice. Like I've seen this before.
Yeah, I mean it's at least not the dead ball. Did you see that that Shohei hit the other day where he hit it the exact same exit velocity, same launch angle and everything? Last year it went like 423, and this year it went like 350.
Yeah, yeah. Andrew Vaughn would rake with this college baseball.
Send him back to college,
right? You know.
Yeah, get him to get his doctorate now. You know, use up some of that extra eligibility. Mm-hmm. So if you guys have not been paying attention to Future Sox in the last week, we have released a bunch of prospect lists, positional prospect lists. We've also released affiliate previews of all of the org affiliates. We've talked to Elijah, talked to Dan Helody with the Cannonballers the other day. James and I talked with Andrew Murphy on Wednesday, and Jeff and Elijah talked to Kurt Bloom with the Barons the other day. Those are all available in podcast form and as video on YouTube. You can find all of this stuff at futuresox.net, where you can find a Patreon link to support us. If you like our content, we would appreciate that. My name is Ian Eskridge at Daily White Sox. He is James Fox at James Fox 917. Our Future Sox account is at Future Sox. We have two other streams / podcasts on this platform currently going. We have the Roundup with Elijah and Jeff, which is usually on Monday nights, but does not stream. So it comes out on video and podcast form on Tuesday. And on Tuesday night, we have Nick Murawski and Danny Miller with Hot Takes and Heaters, which is live on YouTube and Twitch. Thank you so much for coming and talking White Sox org baseball with us this evening. We will talk to you guys next week. We are on every Sunday night at 8 p.m. Thank you so much.